Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Chelsea Echo for a brand new season and a brand new show. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Chelsea Supplement, the show where we're going to get the best journalists that cover Chelsea from all around the world to talk about the big stories from the week gone by. And today we are joined by the fantastic journalist from London World, Rahman Osman. Rahman, mate, how have you been keeping? Busy summer?
Incredibly busy traveling around. So I was in London, then went to Brussels, then went to Berlin, then traveled down to go to Düsseldorf, saw England play Switzerland, and then came back to Brussels, Bruges again, just roaming around, trying to see the world. And yeah, but now we're back again. And it's like you rightfully said, there are no off days with Chelsea, are they?
No, man, it's literally been, you thought when it was going to be quiet, you thought Euros is on, there's going to be no drama, we can sort of put our feet up, enjoy the football. It's usually a quiet part of the year for football clubs. Nah, Chelsea just had to go and do something ridiculous, which seems to be the state of affairs with the club at the moment. But just to give everyone a rundown as to what the concept is. So, with this show, the Roundup Show, we're literally taking the big stories of the week, the big five, and literally just going to chat through them and sort of see what the guys think whenever they come on, and we're going to get Rahman's thoughts in this case as well. But obviously, as we haven't done a show for a little while, it would make sense to go through all the big stories at Chelsea that happened over the past few weeks. So we'll jump straight into it, Rahman, and let's go nice and easy first. We'll just talk about the nice stuff, sort of the things which we've seen develop over the past few weeks. And that is Enzo Maresca's reign at Chelsea has officially begun. Everyone seemed to think that he'd maybe, you know, gone into his own rehabilitation program because he was disappearing. There was no announcement. Nothing was really happening. But it seems to have started pretty well, right, in terms of on the training pitch and what we've seen on the pitch as well, right?
Yeah, there's definitely been an attempt by Chelsea to try and show us more clips of training grounds. I think they've showed us more things about how the manager is working than we've had in recent times, and I think it's deliberate. When they started pre-season, you'd see clips coming up of the manager actually stopping play, saying, bravo, well done, Chile, that's it, West, you know, just to kind of send a message that the manager is working and get everyone behind the team. I think that's what they are trying to do. I can see the plan, and the plan was to bring in a manager who just doesn't coach the team but teaches the players certain things about football. If you invest a lot of money into young players, and the projection is that in the next 2-3 years there would be the big things, you need somebody who's just not a manager or even a coach but also a teacher. So three things in one, and Maresca is kind of that kind of man. I think also they wanted somebody who will grow with the team. So there are a lot of big time winners and Chelsea down the years, especially under Roman, or even just a little bit under Kembe. The idea was always to attract big players and big managers. And I think the Americans have a different style. They want to have potential players that will be big, like to put it like in the next few years they will be the big player. Estevao, the guy from Brussels, I had Neymar say that he's quite excited about him. He's kind of your edge of your seat player. Chelsea have been able to get him, and that's massive if you consider that clubs like Madrid were after him, and Madrid would easily have been able to show him the success of Vinicius Jr. or even Rodrigo and say, listen, We brought these guys at a very young age, and but Chelsea got it. So credit to the Chelsea scout in South America. Amazing, top job there. The same can be said of players like Noni, Madueke. And for me, I know that the jury's still out there, but the thinking, I'm not saying is the absolute best decision, but I'm only trying to explain the thinking behind it. And sources have also said that, I mean, they listen to everything that has been said about how the club is being run. But they are quite confident in this strategy, and they believe that the rough days will eventually lead to a very good path where success will begin to tell.
Well, I mean, you've mentioned some names there, and I think it's definitely stuff to talk about as well, because like you said, that it is interesting, the strategy, because I think in some cases it does leave fans with a bit of taste sometimes where there's mixed messages. I think, like you're saying, that the Americans maybe have a slightly different tact to how Roman Abramovich or Ken Bates operated, but they're wanting to see similar results. However, we are seeing, as you said, Estevao Willian, I think, is a great example of someone coming in. I'm very excited for him. Same with Kendry Páez. However, do you feel that maybe how they're wanting to act in terms of bringing in these young players, but then seeing those results straight away? Enzo Maresca has been given a 5-year contract, in contrast to Mauricio Pochettino, who was only given 2, right? So there's a hope there, I guess, that he's going to grow with the players, as you're saying. He's going to be that teacher. He's that 3-1. But do you think he's going to be given the time to do so? Or do you think maybe there might need to be a slight change in tact in the strategy? Do you think that it's great seeing all these young players come in, some fantastic, exciting talent that we've nabbed from potentially Real Madrid or other clubs as well? Do you think that maybe there might need to be a case of, okay, well, that's great, these are fantastic, but there should be some more mature players in that team that can really help these guys develop to maybe even see those results that the club want? Or do you feel that right now, given how the season ended last year for Chelsea, the club's on the right track to develop and grow and be hitting those top 4 targets and maybe even challenging in a couple of years' time when these young players do arrive?
The answer is straightforward. I think that every manager in the world rises and falls on one thing: results. So there's absolutely no guarantee. If you have 5 years deal, 10 years contract, it means nothing. I mean, just before, Pochettino, we had Porter, was on a long-term contract. He didn't last a year. So the hope, the greatest gift we all have is hope. The hope is that he'll be able to get decent enough results to stay long in the job. Every top manager, it didn't matter who you are. When Mikel came on, and a lot of people tend to go to Mikel and say Mikel's Arsenal, I mean, he's the stadium. Mikel had credit in the bank. Mikel's first season, he won the FA Cup against all odds. That's what bought him time when the tough days came. Chelsea, it's a global club. It's a club, one of the best clubs in the world. And the fan base is hungry for success. They are used to it. They are spoiled for it. So they're not going to accept mid-table. It doesn't work that way. In 2 years, we've got Clear Lake ownership. Finished 12th, finished 6th. It's not going to... They're not going to accept being a mid-table team. So to answer the first part of your question, Maresca needs to win matches. He needs to keep Chelsea competitive. He needs to keep Chelsea fighting and winning incredible games, and adding that to playing a brand of football that gets everybody shouting from the Marty Harden stand, gets everybody going to game and seeing that, okay, they're trying to play a style of playing, and evidently seeing progress in individual players and seeing that, okay, last year Caicedo showed promise. This year, he's taking his game to the next level. Enzo Fernandez was invested in. Is he getting better? Is he getting to the levels we expected him? These are the metrics. And like any other job in the world, at the end of every season, there's going to be an assessment. We'll see where progress has been made. So the owners clearly have a plan. And the plan is to bring in a manager who is hungry, who has a point to prove, who can develop players, who can play in a style, and who can listen to them. This is also a key point. Like, somebody who listens to them and buys into the idea. And that's why, in the end, they went for somebody like Maresca. His promising, given how well his team played at Leicester, and they won the league. And if you speak to people or fans of Leicester, they say one thing: he's a good manager. But they also say, when they go and get off, he doesn't have a plan B. We will see that in the new season. The tough days will come, and then we can assess and see, does he have what it takes to really be at the top level? So, to be honest, there's no guarantee. Absolutely not. Chelsea will try to win something. Last season, one of the biggest disappointments was not winning at least the League Cup, because that was there for the taking. That would have bought Pochettino time to be able to, at least get the second season he wanted. If Maresca comes in, and it can happen, is when Pep Guardiola took over Barcelona in his first season, there were doubts about if he could be able to make the step up from Barcelona B to the main team, and he blew everyone away. So if the principles Maresca, and if you speak to people behind the scenes, they are seeing the principles, they are seeing the passion, they are seeing his work ethic, and some of the players were even upset about the way Pochettino's reign ended, are beginning to understand or buy into his method. So in the end, it's difficult for me to say, yes, he will be given time regardless of what happens. But I think that it's a merger of both. Impressive results or encouraging or even at least promising results made by long-sightedness.
Well, I think it's going to be interesting to see how that marries up, because you're absolutely right. It boils down to results and seeing those returns. And it's all well and good sort of us, like I said, let's look into it. We've got to see what happens here. We got to quote-unquote the phrase, which I think any football fan hates, trust the process. But I do think that, yeah, I'm in the same position as you. From what you're saying, I'm excited to see how it develops. The plan B, or their lack thereof, does make me worry quite a lot, especially considering what we had with the previous Italian manager in Maurizio Sarri, who just wasn't quite... I think it was a cultural fit as well. So I think it'll be really interesting to see how that develops and how that situation goes. And there's no doubt that you and I will be talking about that several times over the course of the entirety of this season as it does go on. But we will move on now. And you did mention a couple of players that we're hoping that we're going to see growth from. And one of those players, unfortunately, has had a lot of drama recently, and that is Enzo Fernandez. Now, it's fair to say that what he has done and what he has said is completely out of order. And it's something which he needs to be educated on. But you've spoken obviously earlier about, you know, is the growth there for him? Are we going to see those steps in the right direction? And I guess there's two sides to that sword as well. So not only do we want to see, the football improve, and obviously we saw that last year with the injury he was carrying, we didn't see the best Enzo Fernandez that we'd seen 2 years prior, or 18 months prior, should we say, because he came in the January, of course. But obviously now socially, there's a bit of an issue for him, obviously, with the French contingent of the Chelsea camp and some other players as well. I mean, what do you think about the whole situation with Enzo Fernandez?
Well, that's crass, man. There's no hiding of the fact. I mean, it's crass. I've seen a lot of people try to spin it, and it's wrong. Wrong is wrong. There's no subjective wrong. There's no context. It's wrong. He's taking the first step to admit that he was wrong, and by apologizing, you've got to see the thinking behind it, and the thinking behind it is mocking people's praise. That's totally unacceptable in Israel. If you follow the history of how black people have been treated in Europe down the years, the least you can do, especially if you work in a multicultural environment, is respect people who've fought so many years to be able to have a chance at life, just a little chance at life. Education is key, and progress is being made, albeit slowly. But yeah, I kind of understand a bit about Enzo, because I've been doing a little of research about him, and Enzo's progression has been incredibly too swift. And so many years ago, maybe let me give you a bit of history of how players like Enzo progressed to Europe. They used to go through clubs like Porto, where Porto will go to South America and get a young promising player, bring him to Portugal and possibly give him about two seasons. They adapt to European football, they understand European thinking, and then after two seasons, teams like Real Madrid and stuff will get them. That was a progress. Now, as the times have changed, Madrid and big clubs have then moved straight to the South American, but, and we give an example like the Kendrick and Estevao examples. Enzo moved to Benfica. In 6 months, he had his big breakthrough, solely based on his form at the World Cup. So he's new to Europe in general. He's not even adapted to European football in Portugal or Benfica. And if you were following his whole transfer, it was an absolute mess because Benfica didn't want him to leave. He tried to force the move. Then when he realized it wasn't happening, he went back to play for Benfica, scored, pointed to the badge. And the next week, he realized Chelsea were coming back to him, and then he took him. Now, he was just about adapting to life in Portugal, and then he gets a big move to Chelsea. Chelsea is easily one of the biggest clubs in the world, and the Premier League is by far the best league in the world. The demands are quite different. So this is somebody who's just literally adapting to European football, and he's been thrown straight into the biggest league, been a record signing, barely speaks the language, expected to carry a big language. So many things are happening in his head. But clearly, he's got to understand the responsibility that comes with the role he has. Because this is why it's important. He's suddenly been trusted with so much influence that he has to be very mindful of what he does or what he doesn't do. And this is where they're thinking. It's mocking. It's not just bands. It's mocking people's race, and that is no go with people of influence. It's totally wrong with everyone, but much more with people who are able to influence kids watching. So that's why it's no go. We need to condemn that, but we need to also be mindful that we educate. It's kind of really quite important for us to understand him, and that's why I said that he's taking the first step. But admitting that it was totally wrong. And I think Chelsea, I mean, from what I've heard, Chelsea are doing everything possible to ensure that it's a united dressing room. And I liked what Reece James said after the Wrexham game, that he's tried to speak to him, but the time differences were big. And I mean, Reece then highlighted how wrong this was, and that's credit, that's good leadership, that nobody's trying to massage the issue from the player perspective. It was totally wrong to do it. And so I think time is a powerful healer in situations like these, and it's important that sometimes, or situations like this, we give it time for it to lead, and then hopefully the lessons have been learned going forward. But yeah, totally wrong.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, I was asked about it on TalkSport a few days ago, and look, I think it's, to be very, very transparent for me, look, I am a white man from the UK, so I might, like you said, it's all about education, and I'm someone who is from a very privileged background, so look, I can't sit here and say this is how it should be, this is what should be done. And I think, like you're saying, it's important that Chelsea are doing the right things to push in the right direction. And I think big credit as well to Paul Canavan, who's actually stepped up to say, look, I will help in this situation. He will help educate Enzo Fernandez, because I mean, for me, it's from a closer to home perspective. Look, the Italian side of my family, they are from small villages, they're from small towns, and unfortunately, like you're saying, there's a lack of education. So there's some things that are said and some things that, you know, they do where you go, okay, well, hang on, guys, like, the world is a lot smaller. You need to understand that when you come to certain places, this is how you should be operating, this is what you should be saying, this is how you need to integrate into what's going on. And I think it's really important that in the time, especially like now, where I think in my lifetime I've not seen so much division. You think about how the world's become so much smaller, but now it's become so much more divided as well. I think it's really important that people like myself and you know, of privileged backgrounds, learn and understand why certain things should and shouldn't be said. And hopefully, as you said, time's a big healer. I really hope that Enzo Fernandez can step up and learn from this situation. Because like you said, he's a big presence in that dressing room. He's somebody who is, I think the club are basically saying that he is going to be the poster boy for Chelsea. And he's in a position where he needs to improve. So, you know, I'd actually love to sit down with you and learn more as well. Because you and I have spoken about Ghana quite a lot as well. And, you know, sort of the history there. And Lee, and I'm not just talking Michael Essien. I'm talking lots of different stuff, guys. Me and Rahman have sat down in the rows after the game and had fantastic conversations. So, you know, I'm looking forward to more of those this season, man. But yeah, we'll move on now. And we'll touch on the next stories. And the next big story, obviously, is the goalkeeper situation. Now, Chelsea look pretty set to be signing Philip Jorgensen from Villarreal, who looks great with his feet, which I understand is a massively important thing for Enzo Maresca's system. But I'm worried about his hands. That's something which I do think is quite important for a goalkeeper. But, I mean, Rahman, in your research you've done over the past few days, obviously following this story, can you enlighten people to the situation of Philip Jorgensen and give us your thoughts on him as well?
Mate, he's Swedish-Danish. And, yeah, if he's Danish, you remember Peter Schmeichel was one of the greatest goalkeepers in the history. And his son Kasper didn't do that bad, did he? So, yeah, maybe Philip Jorgensen has inherited something like that from Denmark. And he's played for Sweden and Denmark already at a juvenile level. And I think now he's settled with Denmark. And I'm quite finding the whole situation a bit tricky in so many ways. But I'm going to trust him based on one thing. He got his debut through Unai Emery. And I like Unai Emery. Emery, is, for me, is one of the best. He's an underrated tactician. I mean, if you look at Emery's teams, I mean, a lot of people tend to judge him on his time at Arsenal. And I didn't even think he did bad at Arsenal. He got to the final of the Europa League. And it was never going to be easy coming after Arsene Wenger. But his PSG team was quite really good. And they won the French League easily. And everybody knows what he's done with Sevilla, even Villarreal and stuff like that. So he's quite really a manager I highly respect. And from research, actually, I was speaking to somebody in Spain yesterday. And he said to me that when Unai gave him his debut, Unai said to him that he would see him in the Premier League not too long. And in less than 2 years, he's been linked with Chelsea move. So clearly there's something there. What I don't understand is why is all of a sudden, like, Chelsea said, oh, well, the communication was that Sanchez was going to be the first choice goalkeeper this season. And Sanchez is not the best at his feet, but he's not horrendous, to be fair. He's not horrendous. Petrovic last season didn't do that bad, given the situation, because Kepa left at the dawn of last season. I remember speaking to Pochettino in his press conference, and he was quite optimistic that Kepa will stay. Then Kepa left when he saw the window of opportunity at Madrid. Sanchez stepped up for a couple of while, got injured, and Petrovic didn't do that bad. For the amount of money they signed him, you will think that for somebody who performed that way, the least he would get was another season to try and see if he could improve. Well, he's the one being shoved out of the club. But that's the brutality of football, and sometimes at top club, you need to make these tough decisions. Fair enough. I am quite concerned that the least, the way we are handling this goalkeeping situation is quite tricky in that Jorgensen also still has a lot of learning to do in his game. It's not like he's kind of like a Thibaut Courtois who can handle pressure. One of the most challenging things, or one of the most challenging dressing rooms you can ever play, and this is coming from me who has spoken to players who've played in Chelsea, that dressing room can crush a talent. So if somebody comes in and needs time to adapt, and Jorgensen would come in and clearly needs time to adapt. And also, one of the things that killed Kepa's career was that a lot of people felt he wasn't good at save. He wasn't a good shot stopper. So you need a good emergence of somebody who is incredibly good with his feet and a good shot stopper. How certain are we that Jorgensen's got the feet, he's got the hands, and he's got the mental strength to come in straight away and establish himself? Classical example, one of the most underrated performances of last season was Andre Onana. Listen, when Onana came into Man United, the expectations was that, because he had gotten, and this was somebody who got into the Champions League final, was easily one of the best goalkeepers in that Champions League season, and had one of the, maybe a spotless performance in the Champions League final against Man City. His performance, you should watch that Champions League final again. He played it as he was playing behind his garden. The way he took on balls and pressure. Even he felt the pressure of playing in the Premier League. So it's not straightforward like that. This is my only reservations about the how everything is being handled. Also, on the financial point of view, I think the way Chelsea kind of discard players make it quite really difficult to get them sold for the fee they demand, because it's already out there that Petrovic is surplus to requirement at the moment as they go in for a goalkeeper. And Maresca wants a new goalkeeper. There's no hide from that. Petrovic is kind of with a small knock, but I'm told he'll join the team in the States at some point in time. And yeah, from a dressing room perspective, I think that players are watching and paying attention to those small details on how players are hired and discarded. And you don't want players to be in a club thinking they're just toys that could be moved away easily. This could also be disruptive and affects commitment on a long-term basis. But you're right, he's a promising goalkeeper. And if he comes in and delivers the way the manager wants to play, hooray, everybody will forget it and say, yeah, that's it. And we've had some great goalkeepers down the years. I remember the situation of Edouard Mendy and Kepa, when when it became quite clear that Kepa was struggling, I think Lampard was quite brilliant with the Edouard Mendy situation. And credit to Petr Cech, he knew him from Rennes, trusted his ability, and he literally won us the Champions League. I maintain, without Edouard Mendy, we don't win the Champions League. Those period that he was there, he was incredibly good. So goalkeeping is key, and I can understand why there is that need for what they call a modern day goalkeeper with good at his feet. I just hope they're handling it quite well.
No, I agree with you. Look, I'm very old school. Whenever someone talks about a goalkeeper and the first thing they say is, look how good he is with his feet, alarm bells start ringing. I'm going, oh no. I think about Kepa and how we gave him the name Poppadom Hands, because anything he try and save, straight through, cracked, forget it. You know, if you were any manager on the touchline against Chelsea when Kepa was in goal, I'd happily turn round to all my midfielders and go, 30, 40 yards, just have a go, probably go in, because Kepa wouldn't be able to save those for some reason, but he'd make these wonder saves. I'm intrigued to learn more about Jorgensen. There's no doubt that I'm going to go out and I'm going to, okay, well, let's go find out more information. Let's look at a bit more about him, do even more research. And I have been doing my research over the past few days. And look, I always take compilations with a bit of salt. But it's kind of, you know, you've got to take it with a pinch of salt. And I looked at those compilations and I went, some of these saves, you're just pushing it straight back out into play. And I noticed it cuts just as it falls to an opposition player. So I'm going, okay, right, let's look at this. I completely understand the thought process of Maresca being, you know, how important it is for his system to have a goalkeeper that can play with his feet. You know, you think about when Pep first arrived and he brought in Claudio Bravo. Claudio Bravo, great with his feet, fantastic at Barcelona. Everyone knew he was, again, like Onana, one of the best goalkeepers in the world. Didn't go so well. He then moved on. He then found Edison, who now is on the market. And if I'm Chelsea, unfortunately, with our wage structure, he wouldn't fit. But I'm looking at that and I'd be going, interesting. I might have a look at that. That's Premier League experience. But this is like goes back to what I was saying earlier. You know, we were talking about Maresca and fitting in with Chelsea and being very key and important with the style, but how the ownership want results, they want to see development. There's a key area here where there is, I feel, a real lack of understanding between Maresca and the ownership, and that middle ground is the sporting directors. Because it feels like, for me, for example, right now, these guys are in the safest job in world football. They can do anything and they're going to get away with it. And I say that because they signed Jordi Petrovic as one of their choices of talent. He was someone who they were going to see develop, do really well, came from the States, you know, really start get going. And then after one season, you know, we looked at, like you're saying, Bobby Sanchez and him, right? With the eye test, if we can look, take statistics, and the statistics are very close between the two of them, right? But with the eye test, I think everybody felt more confident with Jordi Petrovic in goal. Because even though Bobby Sanchez was maybe slightly better with his feet, he didn't look confident with his feet, but he was maybe slightly better with his feet. When it came to making those basic saves, there was a lot left wanting. And I think this is the situation where, like you're saying, those three corners of that triangle, you know, being good with your hands, being good with your feet, having that mental strength, I do worry that the one position where I don't think you want to sign any more young talent is goalkeeper. That's where I'd argue that's where you'd want a stable base. So it's going to be interesting to see how this develops. I mean, speaking of that stable base, there has been other names thrown into the hat, and a big one that's come out of the news today. Obviously, Kepa, as you said, he had his eyes on Real Madrid. He loved it over there. He won the Champions League. He was happy. But there is potential for Andre Lunin to swap with Kepa and come to Chelsea. Do you think that may be a more stable option? Do you see him as a player who, if we didn't get Philip Jorgensen, do you think Lunin maybe fits the bill a bit more and is somebody who, because he comes from Real Madrid and with Thibaut Courtois' situation last season, he did play a lot of football. Do you think he's somebody who you think could step up to the plate immediately because he brings that experience? Or do you think it's a case of, we're signing a second string goalkeeper here to become our first choice? I'm not too sure about that.
Yeah, I think Lunin is, it's at the moment, an upgrade on Kepa. And beyond being an upgrade on Kepa, well, his performance justified that he was an upgrade on Kepa. Kepa had the starting slot when he first went to Madrid. When he got injured, Lunin came in and caught fire and never looked back again. You should watch that Man City game against Real Madrid. Lunin was unbeatable that game. I mean, incredible saves. And even in La Liga, actually, he made some really game-winning saves. And I wouldn't begrudge him. He really wants out, and I like players like that. He reminds me so much of Martinez when Martinez was at Arsenal. And I think Leno was injured or something like that, and he took his chance. He felt he took his chance. And he didn't feel the trust of the manager, so he went to Villa. And he's easily the best goalkeeper in the world. Lunin feels that way. He feels that. Listen, no disrespect to Thibaut Courtois. He's earned his right to be number one at Real Madrid. But last season, he was out with an ACL for 9 months, 10 months, something like this. And I literally was the reason we got to the Champions League final. So he's pushing. He's pushing to go. There's no doubt about that. Where it benefits Real Madrid is that they know Kepa is desperate to leave Chelsea. They know this. They know that Kepa is incredibly desperate to leave Chelsea. The key turning point for them why they are interested in this move is that they also know that Kepa is happy to be number two, which is rare for goalkeepers. He's more than happy to take the Madrid deal on the table. He's actually more than happy to take a pay cut to go to Real Madrid. And this is Kepa, who, when he signed for a loan deal, literally packed everything he had out to Madrid and gave every hint that he didn't want to come back. He didn't want to come back to Chelsea. So generally, I think that an upgrade of goalkeeper, yes, he is. Does that work for Chelsea? Absolutely, yes. They get a new goalkeeper who wants to challenge for the number one spot, somebody who would love to play in the Premier League, and somebody who needs a fresh start or generally. So, yeah, I've seen, especially AS. AS have been quite detailed about their report on why they feel that Madrid would consider, even at some point in time, a swap deal, swapping a money deal. So if I'm Chelsea, I'll be looking at that. But I kind of suspect that Chelsea are not quite keen on it because of wage structure and the way the club is being run at the moment. I think Jorgensen fits the wage structure, the idea they have for the club going forward. And that's why that is much more out there consistently. But for me, a swap deal would be perfect. Maybe somebody needs to top up a bit of money, but both clubs can leave shaking their hands. Chelsea get rid of a high earner on the bill. They get rid of somebody who doesn't want to be there. They get a goalkeeper who wants to come to Chelsea, who wants to compete for the number one position. Real Madrid get the adequate number two that they want, and maybe they don't have to pay a lot of money, and both goalkeepers get a fresh start.
You've sold it to me now. I was sitting there being, again, unsure. I just, for me, the whole situation when you analyse these players at the minute, I think I take every single transfer target with a pinch of salt, purely because it's not... I want a bit of credibility in the bank. I want those players that are so good that can really help the club push on. And I completely forgot about that City game, I'll be honest. When you mentioned it, I went, do you know what? Yeah, you're absolutely right. There's a player there who has proved his opportunity. And I think Emi Martinez is a good example. So I'd be very keen to see that move. But like you're saying, it's less likely. And that makes me quite sad, Rahman. I'm not happy about that. I was really happy. We were going the right way. And then all of a sudden, it's like, yeah, but we're not sure about this. I'm going to sort of, I'm going to, that's my propaganda now for the next month. It'll be get Lunin to Chelsea. And another thing, do you think if Andre Lunin came to Chelsea, it would help Mudryk? Do you think that's another thing that maybe they'd consider if he was coming? Or do you think that that's maybe less important?
Well, yeah, I mean, Madrid don't want to keep... Mate, clearly, Thibaut Courtois will be number one at Real Madrid, but they don't want to keep a goalkeeper who doesn't want to be there. This is Real Madrid. Everybody wants to be at Real Madrid. Everybody wants to play at Real Madrid. They've just gone and signed Kylian Mbappe. It helps them. I mean, it solves a really difficult situation for Carlo Ancelotti in that he doesn't want to have a player who doesn't want to be there. And it helps Real Madrid, like I said to you, like they also get Thibaut. Don't get me wrong. I think they like Kepa. They just don't like him on the wages that he's on, and they don't want to pay big money for somebody who's going to be number two. So if they can find a pact where everybody gets something and loses something, then it works out for them. So from the Madrid perspective, I think, yeah, in a way it helps them. Kepa is not a bad goalkeeper. Honestly, Kepa was the most expensive goalkeeper in history. And those who saw him at Bilbao thought, I think the greatest disappointment on Kepa is that he just never became a Thibaut Courtois, Peter Cech. Because then when he was signed, at some point in time, he was Spanish number one. He was competing with David De Gea. And the expectations was that after a very... In his first season, don't get me wrong, he was so good. I like one thing about Kepa. His confidence is off the roof. People forget it. But this was a goalkeeper who was being taken out in... Was it the FA Cup final or League Cup final against Man City?
League Cup final.
Where he said, no, I wasn't going. That's top confidence. That episode with Mauricio Sarri was one of the worst, but quite... Also on the confidence level, that he was quite confident in his ability, and that would still hurt him. Also, it would still hurt him. But it's a shame he didn't kick on. I thought he was decent in his first season, and again, Chelsea can crash careers. I just felt he hasn't been able to handle the pressure of on the banter sometimes of the field like he should have.
I agree. We'll be interested to see what will happen with that, and obviously we'll be keeping very close tabs on that, and I will be talking to Rahman a lot about the goalkeeper situation and most other things, so make sure that you guys follow Rahman on Twitter as well, because I haven't mentioned that yet. Make sure you go across and follow him, and then obviously follow Chelsea Echo as well for all your other updates. But we will move swiftly on to the next story, because Rahman is a busy man and he's got things he needs to do today, so we need to make sure that we rattle through this and that he can get on with his day. But we'll move on now to Conor Gallagher. Now, Conor Gallagher has been linked with a move away from Chelsea. He's in the last year of his contract. He also seems like he doesn't want to leave, but there are options on the table. Tottenham obviously registering their interest for most of last year. But now, a certain Atletico Madrid have come knocking on the door for Conor Gallagher. Now, Rahman, what can you tell us about that situation?
Conor is happy to sit tight. Conor is happy at Chelsea. So you said Chelsea sporting directors were in the best jobs. Conor is in the best position he can be as a player. He's played incredibly well for Chelsea in the last two seasons. He's playing in England. He's an England international. Got to the final of the Euro. He's got 12 months on his contract. He knows he can speak to club in 6 months. Can leave for free in a year. Chelsea could offer him another deal to protect their asset. But one thing Conor doesn't want to do is sign for less than the value he expects. But that's the problem. Conor is not viewed as a player. With Chelsea, is viewed more as pure profit. And he's aware. Like, don't get it wrong. Conor is aware of his value. And Conor came through at Chelsea, albeit the old Chelsea. This is a new Chelsea. And he, let's be fair, Conor will not struggle to find a club mid-table in the Premier League. And the problem is the wage, which is always going to be a big deal at the moment. But what I know is Atletico Madrid do want him. And I spoke to someone in Spain who said the problem Atletico are having at the moment is meeting Chelsea's valuation, and nobody's trying to pay 50 million for a player with 12 months on his contract. And a player who they clearly know Chelsea want to sell. This is a problem. The thing about Conor that a lot of people don't look is durability. Conor is, I think he missed just one league game for Chelsea the entire last season.
And that was through suspension. He wasn't injured.
And I get that a lot of people say, okay, Conor's maybe technically not gifted, but mate, like, Conor and the right manager is one of the best assets. I covered Crystal Palace the year Conor went there, and he was an absolute fan favorite. That year he scored 8 goals for Palace, was key as Palace got to the, was it the semi-final, quarter-final of the FA Cup. They got beat by Chelsea, actually. They got beat by Chelsea, and Conor didn't play that. As a result of the loan deal with Chelsea, he couldn't play, and Crystal Palace felt that heat. So there are clubs in the range of Palace and stuff who will take Conor in a heartbeat. He knows that. So the situation for him is just go on holiday. What will be, will be. He knows Chelsea want to sell, but it's going to be on his terms. If a club want him, they need to meet his team. Atletico Madrid is one of the top teams in Spain. And, I mean, Kieran Trippier went there and won La Liga. He won the La Liga title. English players are increasingly open to going abroad. Jadon Sancho has proven that you can go abroad and do it. Last season, Ian Madsen played at Dortmund and he got to the Champions League final. Chelsea didn't play in the Champions League final. The best player in Spain today is English. Jude Bellingham plays at Real Madrid. Living in Madrid, playing for Atletico, playing week in, week out, earning good money, being valued, playing for England. If the deals are right, he will take it. But it's got to be right. It's not going to be as if it's going to be pushed on. Nah. And like I'm saying, the contract situation favors him. It's not as if he's got 3 years where club can say, okay, you've got 3 years, we're not going to play you. So for your own career, you need to take a decision and leave. He's got 1 year. In the worst case scenario, sit tight for 6 months, decide where you're going to go, get more money.
It'll be interesting to see, because I think, like you're saying, that one of the most criminally underrated values in players is durability. And you look at Conor Gallagher, not only is his durability criminally undervalued, I feel like his mindset is, which is why so many coaches kept him about. I think for me, growing up, I think a good example is I was never the biggest John Obi Mikel fan. I used to watch him and I was a bit like, I don't see it. I don't know why people keep him out. Yeah, this is, it was like you understand his value now he's gone, right? You can look back with the benefit of hindsight because that's 2020. Conor Gallagher, you listen to what Frank Lampard was saying when he was coaching at Chelsea. You think about Graham Potter, you think about Mauricio Pochettino, you think about Thomas Tuchel. These are all managers that valued what Conor Gallagher brought to the team behind the scenes on the training ground, as well as the quality he brings on the pitch. I think it's the mentality and everything else that he brings, which is so important. And I think that's criminally underrated by the club. And I think it's criminally underrated by a lot of football fans. Technically, yeah, you know what? He's not going to give you a 75-yard pass, which is going to cross the pitch and find the winger straight away. But he'll be that player where, I tell you what, maybe he doesn't fit the Maresca system, how they play when they start. But when it's the 65th minute, the 70th minute, and you just need someone to go and win the ball, make the simple passes, do what you need to do, win the ball high up the pitch, stop teams getting out, there is not a player better in world football, in my opinion, in terms of having that asset available to you.
I was speaking to somebody whose son now is a Chelsea first teamer. I'm not going to put his name out. And he was telling me, so I used to take my son to football when they were all playing together with Conor. And he says, the thing about Conor is a player you want to bring on when you're chasing a game. And that stuck with me. He says, if you're chasing a game and you have Conor Gallagher to bring on, just know the energy levels goes a top notch. He will chase a game. He will pressure everybody. And that, I think, also these days is underrated. Do you understand? So, yeah, I totally agree with you on that point, that what he brings, his mindset. And Conor never... And I say this, as a journalist, Conor is not even media friendly. Conor is one of those players who always comes out in the mix zone and he's got a phone on his ear because he doesn't want to speak to no one. But there's so much respect for the job he does. Honestly, like, you would meet other journalists and do like, when Conor is in the team, he's professional and he really, look at the, what's the name? I think last season when there was penalty scuffle between Noni Madueke, Cole Palmer and Nicolas Junction. Just look at the way Conor handled it. You'd see that he's thinking about team. And it's the same when he played at Palace also. And those who saw him at Swansea also say the same thing. So, and those who saw him when he was a young guy, 11, 12, coming up at Chelsea, they knew he wasn't the most gifted, but he was somebody that he left everything on the pitch. And I think there's space for players like that still in Chelsea.
Absolutely is. And I hope that the club realise that. So, if Conor sits tight, I hope he gets that contract. It's a 50-50 split, I think, between fans, but I am in the 50% that's right. So, you know, that's all that matters. But we'll move on now. And speaking of players who have a contract situation with Chelsea, who it's a bit longer and they're in a less promising position, we'll wrap up today with Trevor Chalobah. Now, obviously, he's been left behind from the US tour. He's basically... it feels like tantamount to potentially being forced out of Chelsea. They're trying to find a suitor for him. Obviously, West Ham have put their names in the hat. What do you think about this whole Trevor Chalobah situation, Rahman?
Again, an absolute mess. Should have been handled way better. There's absolutely nothing wrong with taking Trev. There are players in America that won't play for Chelsea next season, but they are out there. And sometimes it's, you need goodwill in the team. You need, you don't underestimate what goodwill can do, like just having a good spirit around the team. So whoever took that decision didn't consider that. I get that Trevor survived so much assassination if he was being too taken away. I mean, last season when he got injured in America, he didn't play for a long period, and most people, it was out in the media, Trev wanted to go. There was Fulham, there were other clubs, but he stayed tight, fought his way back. And that, again, that's another mentality you want from athletes. That's what sport is about. When you're down, who just wants to accept their fate and say, okay, yeah, I've lost, that's it. That's not sport. Sports is challenge, how you overcome it through injury. And there were so many center backs that were signed, but pay attention. When Trev was back in the team, he was able to keep up players that were signed for big money. And this is someone who came through the ranks. And Trev is literally one of the experienced heads in the team. Actually, it's important. He's in his mid-20s, but he's one that's been at Chelsea for so long, played in different generation of team dressing rooms. So understand what it feels to be like Chelsea. So again, I have no problem if they want to sell Trev. That's not, I have a problem with the way they are handling it, especially given how Trev has played when he got back from injury. There's another school of thought that you take Trev there, you give him minutes here and there, you speak to him behind the scenes, you agree on a decent fee, you shake hands and leave, everybody being happy without creating this whole mess. And it works well for the club. And there are so many situations like that behind the scene. I don't get the whole point, because even Trev, from sources, was not aware he was going to be left behind. There are situations where you can even leave players behind and nobody creates a fuss, but the fact that he's been training, he was seen on the social media's videos they put up, deliberately he was integrating and everything, only for this to drop, is why a lot of people are having problems with this. But that's football. Football can be quite brutal, and if you speak to some ex-players, they'll tell you that sometimes you see them happy and playing, but behind the scenes, it's a nightmare. And that's one of those situations. It's not a nice situation, especially as it's dragged on for so long, given last season they wanted him to leave.
Mm. That's absolutely. It's the way that he's fought back to get back into the team, I think is, it's amazing. And like you said, he has the understanding of being part of Chelsea and seeing how the club's changed, but still understanding the DNA, which has remained and will still be here once this ownership and, you know, whoever's behind the scenes leaves in 10, 15, 20 years' time, this mentality will still be there because it was there for so long beforehand. But I think, a stat which goes under the radar, in the last 13 games, Trevor Chalobah played every single one. In those 13 games, Chelsea remained unbeaten. He was such an important player in that side. And there were some amazing, you can even look at some of the way he played, some of the amazing passes, some of the last-ditch tackles, just everything. He was just someone who was reliable and you knew could deliver. However, the club are thinking, we've got Axel Disasi in that position. We've got, you know, Tosin Adebayo, who just arrived at Chelsea. We've got a massive surplus of centre-backs.
Colwell, we've got Badia Shelley in there. So yeah, it's a lot of players to go through.
Yeah, and it's one, but then you look at that and you go, okay, well, we spent 40 odd million pounds on some of these centre backs who haven't, sure, they could come great, but they haven't given us anywhere near the return. And like we were saying right at the top of the show, the game's about results. And the player who is getting the results in that back line was Trevor Chalobah. So it's going to be interesting to see how this develops. I think realistically, we probably aren't going to see him in a Chelsea shirt again unless he does a Winston Bogard and just decides to go, well, I'm not going anywhere. I'm just going to take the paycheck and that's it.
His position is weakened by the length of his contract. It's not like Connor, because, I mean, he's mid-20s. If he stays for 3 years without playing, that's, the football career goes quite really good, quick. I suspect if West Ham are quite serious, as rumours are saying, he would go there. I mean, Kurt Zouma went there, and he's had a decent career. He's won the, was it, did they win the Conference League? Yeah, they did win the Conference League.
They did. I think he was the captain of the side, I think, or was it Mark Noble? I can't remember. I think it might be, was it a year after Mark Noble left?
Noble had left. Noble was captain when they got to the semi-final of the Europa League. in the next season.
Yeah.
I think they got beat by Eintracht Frankfurt.
They beat Eintracht Frankfurt, beat them, yeah. And then Eintracht beat Rangers in the final, didn't they?
So Chelsea's got a history of players leaving and going to West Ham. It's still London. You don't normally have to even change your house. You can still live in your posh Cobham. Drive to East London, somewhere in Dagenham. Somewhere in Dagenham, back in train, come back, and it's easy. Fulham is also down the road if you wanted to go. I suspect he will make a decision. It's just, you know, emotions and hard decisions, they just don't happen all of the time. They happen and you give them time to think over it and go for it.
Well, we'll have to see what happens. But Rahman, thank you so much for giving us your time. It's been fantastic talking to you, and hope to see you. Well, I will see you. I'll probably see you after the City game, no doubt. Me and Gary will be sitting down and having a chat after that, seeing what happens. But guys, like, please do go and follow Rahman on his socials. Fantastic guy, great journalist, finger on the pulse in most situations. Where can people find your stuff, Rahman?
Read my stuff on London World, 3 Added Minutes, National World. Just socials, Rahman Osman, on Twitter, Facebook and stuff like that. And this season will be classy. Let's get ready, let's move, let's see where Chelsea go this year. Up the Chelsea.
Very good, up the Chelsea, guys. Thank you very much for listening. Make sure you give us a 5-star review on any platform that you're listening to the Chelsea Echo. We are well and truly back and ready for the new Premier League season. Take care of yourselves, guys, and we'll see you later.